Roberta.
And this is Ryan, and this is the Midweek News
on Art Blog Radio. Welcome, everyone. And hi, Ryan. You are sitting with a beautiful view of a lake in back of you. Where are you this morning?
Yeah, I'm outside of Black Lake, outside of Lake Michigan in Holland, Michigan.
Black Lake. Wow. Is it black? Looks kind of blue behind me.
Yeah, behind it's pretty you, nice. Pretty ideal. Like it's a pretty great co-working space. Just sitting on a picnic bench with some seagulls.
Oh gosh.
Yeah.
Get me away from seagulls.
Yeah, no complaints from me right now. Perfect temperature, not too much wind, beautiful sunny day. Yeah.
All right. Well, you just keep those
I can keep rubbing it in.
Yes. Yeah. No, don't do that. Oh. Well, we all are here. And I bet it's not in the 80s today. It's probably going to be in the 70s where you are. And cooler
I think we just cracked 70 just a little bit ago.
Yeah.
And not much more than that today.
Good. Excellent.
Yeah, it's going to be idyllic.
Well,
yeah.
Let's talk about news while we're done with the weather report and being envious of where you are and what you are doing and your companions, the seagulls. I have three things I want to tell people about for the news, three newsworthy things. And it's always going to be idiosyncratic here with me, as you know, but it's my passion coming across here. And I think that's fair. So first, I want to say Ken Lum, who is an all-time wonderful artist and the head of the Fine Arts Department at Penn, and has been interviewed several times on Art Blog. We love his art. He has a solo exhibition opening at Ulysses on August 30th, Friday, August 30th. Ulysses, which is now in Ray, the multi-use live workspace on North American Street. Anyway, the exhibition is called Clump, K-L-U-M-P exclamation mark, which I think is very much fun. And Ken, we'll put links to the podcast that we did with Ken into the transcript, so you'll be able to chase those down if you're interested in his very conceptual and political in his art, so and wordy. There should be words and pictures and politics in what you'll see. So it sounds like a really good exhibit. I'm happy that it's coming up. He doesn't get shown a lot in Philadelphia, which is an oversight. Second is a notable event. There's a Bach Cello Suites project that Megan Bridge, who is a dancer and a dance educator at Temple University, and her son Tristan, who's a teenage boy who plays the cello, they're going to be performing together at the Philly Museum of Art on Friday, August 16th, and Saturday, August 17th. And we'll put all the details about that. Megan, just to clue you in, is going to start writing for Art Blog. She is a co-founder of Thinking Dance, the online publication that you may or may not be aware of. And she is writing a history of experimental dance in Philadelphia, which we're going to proudly debut at some near future date. So stay tuned for that. The performance, by the way, is free with museum admission. So I think Friday is pay what you wish, 6:30 p.m. So that would be the time to go. Apart from that, Saturday, I do believe it's full fee, but the dance performance is not a separate charge. Last event I want to talk about is called No Arena Drag Show. And this is on August 24th, 5 to 8 p.m. at the Folk Arts Cultural Treasures Charter School on Callow Hill Street, Callow Hill and 10th. In solidarity with No Arena in Chinatown, let's talk about Chinatown and Philadelphia, Asian and queer. Now, I know about this because a friend who is also a Velocity Fund awardee has a project called Let's Talk About Chinatown. And I interviewed her. This is Yvonne Long. And Yvonne is a great social practice artist who really believes in art for people, art with people. And she's doing this talking about Chinatown all over the place, including at the drag show on the 24th, to tell people what the value is of Chinatown and why they should care about this arena that's coming in that is endangering Chinatown. So it's a really good project. There'll be a piece coming up in Art Blog pretty soon about my interview with Yvonne. That's about all I have right now, Ryan, but I think that's quite a lot for actually the end of summer, which tends to be a wind down, wrap down, and waiting for the fall to happen. So things are just still percolating all over the place.
Yeah, there's a lot of things happening right now.
Yeah. So what do you have for us today, Ryan?
Well, I wanted to also in the news section, I wanted to add that Crystal Sotomayor won the Black Star Film Festival's Philadelphia Filmmaker Award.
Great.
So that's pretty great. So we need to get her on this podcast sometime. And
I think she has been. Well, yes, on our new news podcast. That would be great. But there is a podcast. I think Whit Lopez did a podcast with her.
She did the documentaries about ICE and Philadelphia no longer working with ICE. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty a powerful change that the city made. A couple of events I wanted to point out coming up on the 17th of August, the first annual Urban Art Fest 52. It's going to be on 52nd Street between Walnut and Spruce. It's going to be put on by Urban Art Gallery. And that could be a lot of fun. It's going to be a block party on 52nd Street from 12 to 7. It's free admission. Some vendors, music, arts, gallerists. Yeah, looks like a lot of fun.
That sounds wonderful.
There.
Wonderful. Yeah.
So a lot still happening in August. School starts obviously in a couple of weeks, but things are still humming along. Mm-hmm. And then I always give my theater shout out. So last week I talked about the Philadelphia Women's Theater Festival. And I just want to pull one out from that is Pancake Queen. That is a story about a retelling of Aunt Jemima's story.
Oh, wow.
And I think that would be a really powerful show to see. That those are all those shows are going to be at Theater Exile. Take a look at those. Tickets are available through Theater Exile, Philadelphia Women's Theater Festival. Find those there. A lot of good theater happening right now. Surprisingly, as you said, it's August. It's in the summer. And yet there's a lot of great things happening. Check out Art Blog Connect calendar to see what's happening. To stay up on different things that are happening throughout the town still.
I want to say, if I can just interject another book here, speaking of a retelling of a mythic character, there's a book called James by Percival, I'm blanking on his last name, Percival Henry, perhaps. I'll look it up. It's a retelling of the story of Jim in Huck and Finn. Sure. Huck Finn?
Percival Everett.
Percival Everett, thank you, thank you.
Gotcha. Uh-huh.
It's really good. It's so powerful. Those retellings of stories from the Black perspective, they just blow you away. They're really good. So, bravo. Yeah.
And then lastly for me, last week I had mentioned that there's some numbers that I wanted to talk about. And so I was looking at a report that I thought was really interesting that I wanted to share some information from, and we'll put this whole report in the show notes so you can look along with it and listen back to what we're looking at. But this is brought to you by Museums Moving Forward. It's a 2023 report talking about museum employees and cultural diversity in the workplace, and their survey respondents came in around 2000. There were 54 museums that they reached out to respond to this. Only one from Philadelphia, ICA in Philadelphia, was one of the respondents.
ICA.
ICA.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed.
Cool. All right. So not the PMA and not PAFA and not LaSalle. Was LaSalle University in there?
Yeah,
or
I was surprised.
St. Joe's University has a museum.
Yeah. Mm. I'm surprised there weren't more respondents. I'd be curious. I'm sure there's a lot of reasons that I'm unaware of, obviously, but I would love to hear more from their thoughts and opinions. But a couple of the key takeaways that they list early on talked about, there is growing diversity, but there's still a lack of diversity throughout, which is not terribly surprising. I think really the biggest takeaway for me was that 60% of art museum workers are thinking about leaving their job. And 68% are considering leaving the field altogether. And And the biggest reason why 82% said that they believe in the work that they're doing is meaningful work. So it's work they do believe in. The problem came down to what I presume to be pay. And 74% of workers cannot afford their basic living expenses from the museum compensation alone. So you're working at a museum and then you have a side hustle. That's a lot. Or you need a second income from a partner in your life. That's a lot to ask. And that included 29% of executives, which was surprising. So,
well, what do you consider an executive? A curator, an assistant curator? Those don't make a lot of money. Are they executives, though?
Yeah, I think it's once you reach that managerial level of the department heads and beyond, I think is where they were classifying that. It was interesting. There's a lot of really interesting breakdown. They break down gender self-reported through the survey. 71% of respondents were women. 64% are white.
So this is self-reporting, anonymous. You probably they didn't have to put their names in there, but they they needed to say what their job was so that they could figure out the levels of experience and levels of disgruntlement, et cetera.
Yeah.
Did there seem to be an agenda behind this? Like the organization, is it known as pushing for better pay in museums, or are they sort of a data wonks? You know, they just this like one to was, gather data.
Sure. This one was specifically talking about equity. They're endeavoring in this part to, I think, identify gaps in that. And I think tenure was one of those things. So like if you were looking at the tenure numbers that they were offering, if you were white and male, you have the most likelihood of long tenure, which shocks no one. I think it's along those kind of things where we, as much as we try, we still give in to biases and preconceived stereotypes and things of those natures, just kind of generally as part of our culture. And we need to continue to do more work to open up who works where and why and for how long and who gets promoted. Level promotion, likelihood of promotion comes in. Something on the level, I can't remember where I put that note, but something on the level of 13 years between promotions in museums.
Wow.
You may not have a lot of upward mobility, but that seems like a long time to stay in a position to then wait for a promotion.
That would be because they're not unionized. I mean, if you were unionized, you would put those sort of, you know, promotion benchmarks in there. You would build that in and you would negotiate it and you get pushback from the institution, of course, but it could be a make or break issue. And it says to me that museums are just not unionized. And in fact, it would be good to know if any of the museums that they surveyed had unions in them.
Yeah. I'm not sure they said that, but I know they were saying that 84% of the respondents, at least, were non-unionized. I'm not sure if they were broke down. If there was a breakdown between job positions and type of work. But yeah, so we'll have a link to this document. It's a 137-page report. It's really interesting. A lot of takeaways from it. But yeah, pay and equity, same conversation, different day. Hope, you know, it's maybe getting better, but it's still worth having a conversation. Yeah, next week I want to talk about some of the foundational fundings for galleries and art museums after the pandemic, and how artist pay is still down by a quarter from 5 years ago. So we'll talk about that next week.
So artists pay at organizations other than museums, kind of thing?
Yeah. Through galleries, through museums, through foundations, through grant funding, because so many of those shuttered or they lost their funding, or a lot of those things.
We're still not out of it. You know, the pandemic and the recession really did a number on everybody. And it's, you know, restaurants, they're in the same boat, and theaters, oh my gosh, you know, it's difficult. Opera Philadelphia had a really very hard decision to make, and they didn't go forward with their festival this year, their O Festival, which they have had and was, you know, nationally renowned as being a great thing. So I don't know where we get the money. And I think we were talking about this earlier. When you knock on the door and the person opens and you are asking for something, and mm-hmm. whoever opens the door has an ideological mindset, and mm-hmm. it may be a lot different than yours. And so you have two forces coming together that are almost irreconcilable when mm-hmm. it comes to that. And I don't know how you change that. It's got to be a complete societal overhaul, I think, which sure. is for another discussion entirely.
Yeah.
Anyway, I want to mention a book because I do this. And we have a book here that one of our former writers, Natalie Sandstrom, wrote a chapter in. Her chapter is called Creating a More Equitable Experience for Museum Interns. So this book, too, is about equity, has lots of chapters. It's an edited volume with essays by, I don't know, it looks like 50 people. But it's called For Love or Money. And that's really what it boils down to, right? You love
does,
your job,
yeah.
but you need the money. And so
it's
a disequilibrium there.
Yeah.
And we'll put a link into this book because I believe this book is online. It was published by museums, et cetera. There's a lot of people working in this area with the data gathering and the essay writing and the advocating. It's a definite good thing. And then hearken us back to your statistics, which you did give us once before, about how much the city of Berlin has in its arts budget. Do you remember that number? It was a big, big number.
Yeah, €1 billion.
€1 billion.
Yeah.
For like a year?
Per year, yeah.
So I mean, amazing.
It really is by design. So, you know, just what we were talking about in the news a couple of weeks ago when the NEA budgets were trying to be slashed by a quarter again for no reason. There's no reason to do this.
Right.
Just because they hate art, I guess.
It plays well with certain constituencies.
Yeah, it just boggles my mind. We're getting less art and more consumerism, and I would love to see some more art. And you know, what are we designing? Like, these are people who haven't been to Berlin and experienced public art, public space, public pleasure. And I would love to see Philadelphia. I think it could be a model for the rest of the U.S. And I think
that
it's doable.
It should be great. I don't know if it's doable, but, you know.
Well, we give $1 billion in this city to police and prisons. Berlin gives $1 billion to art. So I'm going to argue it again that it's by design.
It's more complicated. It is by design, but it is complicated by the demographics of the city. I've never been to Berlin. I don't know what that city is like. It's not one of the top 10 poorest cities in Europe. I'll tell you that much I know. Whereas Philadelphia is probably the top poorest city in this country. You know,
well, I
think
there's
it's time basic
for a road
differences.
Art blog road trip to Berlin, then. Well, we should go. We'll do a live podcast in Berlin.
We'll have to knock on some doors to make that happen, Ryan.
Yeah, sounds
but
good.
I'm all for it. Let's do it.
Me too.
Well, on that note, the travel note, anything
travel
else,
note.
Or shall we just travel on out?
Let's travel on out. Thanks, Roberta. That was good.
Thank you, Ryan. And we'll see you next week. And bye, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, it's everybody, Roberta. For listening. This is Ryan, and this is Art Blog Radio's Midweek News.
Okay, cheerio.
Bye-bye.